gateway project.
It'll, and I'm thinking between this and, you know, the other side of 85th, really set the tone for any further development.
East, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I heard Arthur mention that, wanting this to be the last one. Is that the track you guys thought you were on?
We did get onto that track, yeah. We reduced it down to just a few concerns that were summarized pretty well right there.
Yeah, yeah, so. All right, well, it's 7. We have a quorum. Should we go ahead and start, or do we know if others are showing up for sure, or just get going? All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Just a quick reminder to turn off cell phones. And Happy New Year. And with this, we can get started with the first design review board hearing of 2019. Can we start with roll call, please?
Carolyn Adams.
Here.
Brad Brown.
Here.
Carlos Costanella. Shoshana Cohen. Navina Lukanova.
Here.
Tim Olson.
Here.
Dave Russell.
Here.
All right. Today we have the Rose Hill Mixed Use project. I'm not saying anything else on the agenda, so we will right now take any comments or requests from the audience if they have items not on the agenda that they'd like to speak about tonight. And seeing none there, we can just go ahead and jump right back into the Rose Hill Mixed Use.
All right, thank you. Tony Levitt, Planning Department. I'll just give a brief overview of what we did at the last meeting and then let the applicant dive into their presentation. So again, the goals of the meeting tonight is to review and discuss how the applicant has responded to DRB's direction from December 3rd and also consider any public comments if there is some. The DRB should provide direction to the applicant if needed. If needed, we would ask them to specify any items they would like to see at a future meeting. The other option is continue to a future meeting in order to complete the SEPA review. That is something we will need to do because SEPA has not been completed on the project yet. So a December 3rd meeting, we handled steps 2 and 3 at that meeting. As part of the original phased review plan. The first half of the meeting, we focused on detailed elevations and articulations, basic building materials, landscaping plans, and exterior lighting. The second half, we went into more detail about the building materials and colors, landscaping specifications, pedestrian seating areas, awnings and weather protection, and parking garage details. So from that meeting, the DRB was accepting of their overall massing and detailed elevations and material usage, but the board did request that the applicant return to this meeting to address the following items. They wanted the applicant to look at different options for the design of the Northeast 85th Street facade for Building D, look at reducing the heights of the planters along 85th and stepping down of weather protection along 85th Street as the road dives down. More detailing needed about along the Building D facade adjacent to the U-Haul site. Explore more parapet and rooftop modulation along longer facades, including the north elevation of Building B. You guys wanted to see revised landscaping plans to include more variety and interest. And finally, provide additional details of the service and loading area designs of the project. So again, DRB's authority is to review for consistency with design guidelines for the Rose Hill Business District. If applicable, any zoning regulations that require DRB approval. Staff will review for the project for compliance with height, lot coverage, landscaping, buffers, setbacks, ground floor uses, rooftop appurtenances, etc., and also traffic impacts as part of the SEPA review. So tonight, we'd like you to provide feedback on how the design guidelines apply to the proposed project, provide feedback to the applicant's responses to the items from the December 3rd meeting. And we have basically two options for continuation tonight. If the board needs additional items to address design issues, we will want to continue the DRC to an agreed upon date with the applicant. If the board finds that the conceptual master plan, as conditioned, incorporates the RH3 design considerations as set forth in the Rose Hill Business District Design Guidelines, the board should continue the DRC to the May 6th meeting in order for the project to complete the SEPA. The idea being at the May 6th meeting, then we would come back. If there are any site plan changes or anything that like that that come out of the design review, I'm sorry, out of the SEPA review, we can address those with you. If not, then we can move forward with approval of the project. So with that, any questions? Okay, I will pass it on to the applicant.
Hi, Steve Johnson with MG2 Architecture. I'm here together with a lot of MG2 people, Dominique, Bill Fuller, David Hewitt, Gabriel Reed, Arthur Schulte, and we also have a representative from Madison Development. So thanks for joining us tonight. For this to be, as Tony said, it's effectively our fourth meeting since you were gracious enough to allow us to have a double meeting at the last presentation. Go ahead. So as Tony said, he outlined what we did at the first meeting and then double meeting at the last meeting. We received a lot of great comments, and I was telling Tony right before the meeting that those comments actually, I really believe they've improved the design. They're not compromises, so we're excited to show you those tonight. So to illustrate basically what we're going to be reviewing today, and as you saw it in the 3D model on my left, is the 85th Street elevation, the frontages along U-Haul at face onto that, and as well as the 120th elevation of Building D. So we'll be focusing mainly on that as far as the presentation for the architecture tonight. Then in addition, following this, then we'll talk about the roof modulation study that we've done, as well as some recommendations on revisions to the landscaping. Go ahead. This first comparative elevation shows on top the elevation that we had before. Essentially, it was these thickened walls that we had at the end of the residential wings that I think that were part of the problem. We brainstormed with you on how to come up with a different solution. But effectively, I think what we came to was we needed to bring this design into the fold of the rest of the design. And I think that these thickened walls that were this symbolic gesture of trying to protect from the noise of 85th Street, we need to let go of that idea. And as you can see, what we've done down here now is we basically have wrapped the elevations around from the sides, bringing the blue corrugated metal around and the clay-colored cement board from both directions symmetrically on that facade. So I think now these really do represent residential elevations. We've increased the amount of glazing, wrapped the balconies around. Another thing that we did is we thought that this was too diminutive of the size that needed to happen along 85th Street, especially that the signage on that level was almost on plane with the corner of 85th and 122nd. So knowing that the retailers would want that sign band to be lifted up higher, and also we wanted the presence of this commercial facade to be stronger. So effectively, what this does also is it raises up the storefronts to be higher. Those storefronts, again, overlook the grocery store below. We also thought that this was a kind of a foreign element, so that went away when we raised the facade. Go ahead. So looking from the southwest, this is the same 85th Street elevation. Now you can see how the elevation now wraps around the corner, large corner glass areas, corner balconies, and such. We've also added at the end of this taller now brick facade, we've added a slot window, which is really at the end of these corridors to get views out the residential quarters as they cross through there. This section cut is through the mass of the building here. Here you can see as one walks along the edge of the building, you can look down now into the grocery store here. But you're also buffered by this planter, which is separated from the noisier section of the walkway along 85th Street. So we still feel that this is a really strong element to have the exposure of the commercial to one side and to be somewhat buffered from the side. One thing that we've done is we've lowered these planters. That was a request to get better visibility from the cars in the street into this storefront area. Now, again, this walkway terraces down with stairways in three sections, so you're always staying as close to the grocery level as possible as you step down. That together with now the overhead weather protection or canopies are stepping down so that they're an appropriate height to provide good weather protection as you walk along. Again, we think this is a great beginning of a route that will continue all the way down 85th and eventually get to the new transit center. We're featuring stepping back these facades so that we can graciously end on an inside corner these two material types as they wrap around. Also, behind the sign band in section, you see the mechanical space that we're providing here, which would be open air. That's to help prevent having any exposed mechanical for the grocery store that we can put into that area. And then we have three residential corridors that connect these two wings. And then we have the units behind that. Go ahead. From the opposite corner, of course, this elevation is symmetrical. Again, you see the slot glass. You see the stepping down of the canopy, the stepping down of the planters. And, of course, here we have the commercial space, a smaller commercial space that fronts onto the corner plaza. Go ahead. Another thing you'd asked us to look at was the frontage along 120th Avenue. As you approach the project, one of your concerns was your first impression of the project as you approach on this street is all about this corner. And so we took a good hard look at reconfiguring the interior and the heights within the interior so that we were able to bring this down significantly. So as you can see, these are two exact views, but you see how diminutive this is now. We've reduced this down in 10 foot in height and added an additional partial residential level here and terraced down the rooftop plaza and terraced the stairs down as well, this pedestrian stairway. So effectively, we've reduced the height of this concrete area about 15 feet and actually brought down the overall height 10 feet and added in, which we thought was a nice addition, adding in some residential units that are a little closer to sidewalk level. Also, there was a comment about, or it was more of a question, what was our plans as far as the detailing of this brick facade here? And we took a hard look at this and realized there was some really interesting horizontals we could put in there and do a contrasting brick banding at the floor lines. So we did this, brought those in, and it's difficult to see this with this lighting, but I think this will be a really effective way of breaking that up. We thought this was good enough that we want to do that on all the brick cores throughout the project, so we plan on doing that additional detail as well. We also pulled this facade forward, which helped offset the loss in area by pushing this back. We created a break in the facade halfway back in order to give additional modulation to this entire frontage onto the U-Haul side. And then on the west side, we extended these balconies with westerly views off the ends of this. So again, giving this a little more of a residential character by introducing more balconies, but not balconies that faced south over and looking up into the U-Haul site. Go ahead. As we go around the corner to continue this question of how we're addressing these interior facades, along 85th Street, this was the original design with this thickened wall that went up and over. We've eliminated that notion, and now we're going with more of a typical, what we've done in the rest of the project, an extended cantilevered roof form. You can see what happens in three dimensions when those extend over. It gets a little more adventurous, which is, we think, is kind of a fun way to lead into that courtyard space. Also, we had fairly small window areas, and we were trying to be cut off the views looking down into U-Haul, but with your recommendation and re-looking at this, I think we realized that there were some great westerly views in this direction, especially as you get higher up. So we put balconies throughout this elevation, also created a notch, vertical notch here to help break up the facade more, and then wrap the balconies around the corner. So we've got a great deal more glass to get the views to the west, but also these balconies provide a good sunshade device on this west-facing wall. Go ahead. Now turning slightly to the left, you can see what we just talked about here. This angular wall here, this recessed area, this offset that we talked about from the view over here. Essentially, now we've got seven different faces to the building as you go around the inside of this. And we think that that's a big compliment to your input, as well as I think it really brings all this design into the fold now of the same caliber as the rest of the architecture. Go ahead. Looking down now into this area, we've increased some of the setback of the lower walls so that we could accommodate continuous landscaping along this face here now. So I think we're being really good neighbors to the U-Haul site now, and then we've also added lower landscaping along these outer walls as well. So now we have essentially continuous landscaping along the property line to U-Haul. Here again, you can also see now the step and the terraces. This lowest spot right here on this corner will probably be a residential amenity space, and we'll capitalize on that generous terrace area. Yes, go ahead. So to follow up with the floor plans to represent the changes that we've just discussed, here you can see it. Oh, it just died. There it is. You can see that we've pulled this garage door back 20 feet. And one thing I should point out, by pulling that back 20 feet and making it a solid garage door, that provided an opportunity for all those interior finishes, the interior walls as you approach that door, as well as the ceiling space to be finished. So now since that door is 10 feet lower, 20 feet back, I don't think that there's much chance that you're going to see the underside of the PT slab or anything unsightly that's inside that space. Go ahead. Again, here's that partial level at 1.5 with the two additional units in the amenity space. And then here's the additional offsets in the typical floor plan, this groove here and then this wall jog at this point. So you can see now, you can see how articulated that is in floor plan, and that translates to a lot of interest in the elevations. Go ahead. Okay, so the last thing we're going to talk about architecturally is the study we did on the roof modulation. So we went back and looked at the proposed 75-foot height request that we have through zoning, which seems to be going quite well at this point. And we compared that to the roof heights that we currently are proposing in the design. And there's a 4-foot difference. In other words, a 4-foot dimension and height that we can utilize to either provide a variation of the height of the parapets, or to actually capitalize on raising roof areas and adding interior space, as well as for roof extensions. So if that roof goes up 4 feet and comes out. Now, of course, if we capitalize on that 4-foot height through the entire project, we've got a uniform height, and we're back to something much worse than what we have right now. So what we did is we went back and looked for opportunities. Since some of these areas are currently now 4 feet, this is 4 feet higher, so this is the actual maximum height that we have to deal with. So what we've decided to do is go back and notch things out, and actually to create that modulation and roof form is to remove areas. So removing it here, I think this is one that was spoke of specifically, these two here on the north elevation of building B. This is the north elevation of building A. Since these are the higher elevations, I think it's most effective to try to create some modulation on that facade. We also were able to capitalize on raising the ceilings in this area. Another thing I'd like to point out is, partly to our fault, we presented a lot of our exterior design via elevations. And of course, you never see a building that way. Unless you've got a freeway overpass that's nearby or something where you're seeing an elevation. But to see a true elevation of this building, you would have to be probably a half mile away. And by that time, the roof modulation really doesn't matter. So our argument on this is I think that because of the large moves that we're making in the exterior walls, when seen in perspective, really show a lot of roof modulation variety. Granted, not as much in elevation, but I think in the real world, the way you see it at a pedestrian level, I think that this is very effective. Go ahead. Here you can see some other examples of that near the intersection of 122nd and 85th, how much modulation there is in here. This is looking at building C in the same way. And it's because of not so much the variation in height, even though we have 4 feet to work with and we're utilizing it well here, it's just because of those bold moves in elevation that create that modulation on the roof. Inside the plaza level, you can see some of the variation there. And then because of the sectional quality of the building in certain places, you can imagine as you move close to this building that you would actually lose sight of this upper facade. It might be a stretch, but I really think that is creating in real life, creating a roof modulation of its own. So with that, before I pass it on to landscape, I would like to ask if you have any questions.
What's going on? There was a hatched area at the southwest corner of the project. The corner at U-Haul.
Was it on 85th or on 122nd?
85th, and then set back. The hatched area there, the triangular?
Oh, here, yes.
Yeah, what's going on there?
That is actually the easement that is recorded between our property and U-Haul as a required easement in both directions for access.
Okay, so that's just a graphic.
Yeah, it's a graphic. It shows that. Right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So U-Haul will be allowed to still maintain access off of 85th Street, for better or worse, but that's part of the easement agreement.
Could you go to page 12? Now, on the right-hand side, I don't see the notch out. Step back at the upper levels on the south. Am I missing something?
Oh, here? Yeah, that's not colored blue because it's open to below. So are you speaking of the way this brick facade steps out? Would be on that.
At the upper levels, two upper stories as you head east. In the middle, the south face is stepped back.
Oh, here?
No, sorry, on 85th.
Oh, okay. This is the face of the residential, the one that was a thickened wall and now is not. And then right here it steps out. But it's not colored blue because it's not actual floor area. So we probably should have colored that blue so you could see the mass better. But see, that's a corner there, and this is a corner here. Would be the two outside corners of that brick facade.
So the inner units on the south, the face is stepped back.
Oh, yeah. Now this is, go to the next level up. Go to 13. Here you can see, you're right. You're right. Good call. Yeah, because there should be a step here and here at that upper level. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that should step back there 5 feet and here 5 feet.
And then I had another on page 13. Wait a minute. Yeah, I guess it's not 13.
Maybe our page numbers are off from what you have.
might have put a mail packet.
Did it change?
It did, yeah, they added a page.
The one on the, I'm concerned about.
Maybe it's R14, go ahead, one more. Is the four perspective views of the roofline modulations?
No, it was the truck access on the west. On 122nd.
Oh, yeah, back up to.
On the east.
Their page, it was our page 13, but now.
Okay.
The new one is probably.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's, yeah, 14 on ours. Here?
Let's see, I'm on the east side of the project.
122. Try 16.
The mail packet we got on 13 had a little partial plan diagram on it.
Oh.
Is that the one you're talking about, Dave, this sheet?
You can see the east side on 16.
So what is that called?
Well, that was 13, but now their new 14 doesn't include this.
Yeah, that's back in.
So anyway.
Deeper in our set.
Okay.
Oh, and that was regarding.
It's on building C.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you made the access off 122nd wider, right?
Right. Why don't you go, I think it's deeper in the set, isn't it?
Well,
in the appendix. Go.
Page 16?
Yeah, I don't know what it's.
Here we go. Right here.
Find it. You know which one he's talking about? There's a little floor plan on the lower right.
Sorry to create so much problem. I just have a.
Keep going.
Pushing them.
There it is. Back up. There. No, we got it here.
There it is.
Yeah, we had put that to the back, so we didn't think it was significant.
What the truck nose out for maneuvering means.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what's happening is the trucks would come into here, and because we had this discussion with Tang Nguyen, he preferred that we not bring the trucks in and then exit out here because it was too close to 122nd. So he recommended that we come in and then nose out slightly, but not disrupt traffic, you know, coming in, and then back into the loading zone. So we took some space out of here, and then the trucks can actually come right back out and go that way again. Well, to be an entrance and an exit, we had to widen that slightly. So that's why it's wider, but it's also why it's shifted over a little bit too. It used to be up against this edge. So then what we took is we took these landscape planters and the green walls and then flanked both sides of that to buffer it as much as we could. Of course, there'd be a garage door there, as well as there'd be a garage door, you know, in both locations still. Tang recommended that. He said you were just too close to 122nd without causing a problem if that truck came out and tried to turn and get into traffic.
Thank you.
But the trucks will never try and snap a hard right and go back up to 85th directly. They'll have to go north on, or if it's a smaller panel truck or something.
Well, it's maybe a smaller panel truck, but typically a smaller panel truck wouldn't cross over the other lane and become a disruptor, so that wouldn't be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a question back to either 12 or 13 in the new one, and that actually the section on 85th, which is on page 5. So the corridors at one more. Yeah, that
there
one.
You go.
So the corridors there at levels, I think it'd be 2 and 3. Is that still glass on both sides of that corridor from the street? Do we see through into the...
In the center area here?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the center area, it may be possible, and we're investigating that right now. In fact, we were talking with our building code expert, and he's investigating that. But we can't, of course, open up a enclosed exit corridor to the grocery, but... We're looking at if this is opened up to just be part of that space, that plaza space, and we have glazing here, it may not be an area separation problem between the upper grocery and an exterior plaza. So we're still looking into that. That would be our what we're hoping to do, but we're not sure at this point.
Okay. So if it can't be glazed, it's just blank wall painted, essentially? Do we...
Well, wall painted
signage for the...
It could be. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of control on what the grocery would do with that. But and it's hard to say because we aren't in negotiations with the grocer at this point. But I can't imagine a retailer that wouldn't want to capitalize on that and make it interesting.
Okay. And then a question kind of to staff as well. I'll call it the large forehead now that we have, and you said it's for signage. Mm-hmm. Do we get signage there, or does this have to be the standard pedestal signage according to lineal footage? Or I know it goes through a whole sign process.
Yeah, they have to do a master sign plan process. So as part of that, they will submit a whole design package to us, and I mean that would be something that could be okay. Potentially allowed.
I think most of the signage will be wall mounted. Yeah, there's just not a lot of space for the pedestal or monument signs. Yeah. So that's a legitimate place in the code to put signs.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we like to try to show our expectation of the signage because we know the retailer is going to look for that, but also to show that blank wall area and not put signage on it, it doesn't look right. So they have to work together, yeah.
While we're on that minor little the section through there, the overhang up at the very top, here it appears to show, it appears to show sort of, I'll call it segmented or it's stepped a little bit, so it's not just a plain old, blank.
Oh, just a slab? Yeah, I think that's a problem here. This is not correct. That should be, I mean, we could articulate that edge a little bit and step it, but...
Perspectives are more in what the intent is.
Right.
With just a, okay.
Right. All right. Something bold, a bold stroke at that height, just so that it doesn't get lost in detail.
Okay. My only questions.
Well, while we're sitting here looking at this image, looking at the left, judging by all the balconies, I'm guessing that's living room space that's going to be on the ground floor. Is that going to be a bedroom window that the sidewalk pedestrians can look into?
No, that is living room space. And in fact, the bedroom is this recessed slot right here. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, knowing that there's going to be quite a bit of noise, we'll be investigating triple glazing on that, but we didn't want to not look like a residential facade, so it's going to be quite a bit of additional expense to cure whatever noise is coming through there, but you're right, the bedrooms are not on that wall.
Another trivial question on page 10.
Nothing's trivial. Oh, yeah. Okay, it's probably ours. Probably R11. Try 11.
Okay.
I think I'll add every time. Yeah.
Up there on the right where it's the grocery, what is RES 2,800 square feet? That's not residential, is it? Yeah. Yeah, go left. Oops. Go right.
Literally circling.
What am I missing? Oh, that's a residential. It's the square footage of this area right here, but that doesn't look right.
No.
What is that? What does it actually say?
Well, it might be if you're including the area of the stairs and the elevator.
I wonder if that's possibly the total of all the blue area on this building at that level. That might be, is it? It probably is, yeah, because there's no areas here, right?
To a couple other elevators.
Figure out the ground floor residential.
Right, right, exactly.
Any other pressing questions, or should we jump into landscaping?
Okay. All right. Well, at the end, if you got any more additional architectural questions, yes, speak up. And I'll give you Krista Lindquist with Brumbaugh.
Good evening. So the last time we were here, there were a number of comments on landscape. A number of them had to do with evergreen materials being utilized, more variety in the landscape, discussion about tree placement along 122nd in particular. So I just wanted to walk you through briefly the changes and updates that we've made. Can you go back? Thanks. So we have a number of locations where we've added evergreen trees to the plans. We've added some in this frontage landscape here and here. And along 122nd, along the residential facade, we have some small stature evergreens. And I'll go through what those trees and more specifics are. Again, as you get further down 122nd, we have some. And then along the facade on 120th as well. The majority of this project is over a structural garage lid, so we have some challenges with landscape and planting. So evergreen trees really need a lot of soil area, and they also tend to branch a bit wider, creating over time kind of a dead landscape space underneath. We want this to be a really vibrant, long-lasting urban landscape, and so we're being very careful in the selection of what those evergreen trees are. We want to get something that's a bit more narrow in stature, that is appropriately scaled for an urban environment, but that also will do well in the soil conditions in which we're planting them. We've also added some seating around the site. That was another comment that was made. So we have benches placed near the entry of each building. As you walk down 122nd, there's a bench in here. We have benches at this entry along here, and then we've placed benches at each one of the residential entries along 120th as well. Steve mentioned vines and landscape screening against the walls facing the U-Haul site, so we do have that. We've got narrow landscape spaces there that will accommodate a low evergreen plant material as well as vines to help screen those walls. And we also have evergreen vines adjacent to the loading entrance that was just discussed. All right, next page. So these are just some representative images to give you an idea of the landscape that we're proposing for the project. The main changes we've made are in the trees, again, mentioning the conifers and evergreens. We're proposing a Hinoki cypress and a Moonglow juniper. Both of these trees will get about 20 to 25 feet over time, but they do stay more narrow, so they're a nice scale for an urban environment. We're trying to get a little bit more color in here as well. This Hinoki stays a nice, vibrant emerald green, whereas the Moonglow juniper gives us a little bit more of a blue-silver hue, which we think will complement the architecture and the materials that have been selected. We've also made a change to the street trees on 122nd. Can you go back one slide? Previously, we had a double row, a very linear double row of street trees along here, and some comments were made about maybe it doesn't have to be so, you know, rigid and orderly. So we looked at that and have created a more organic placement of trees in here, which allows us to work in some of those evergreens and a smaller stature deciduous tree to get more interest along that edge. Okay. And that's the paper bark maple here. These are beautiful trees. They don't get enormous. They stay a nice scale, a nice pedestrian scale. The bark is a really beautiful, rich brown color that peels and has a lot of textural interest. And we've also changed the tree type along the North Drive. Previously, we'd proposed a hornbeam, but we're changing it to a parodia, which will give a little bit more canopy and a much more vibrant fall color. We've also worked in quite a bit more texture and color and variety into the understory plantings. We have evergreens that will take on some winter color. It's a winter gold pine. It's a really nice low plant material that's very rugged in an urban environment, but really beautiful in the landscape. We've also worked in more blooming evergreens, more variegated foliage, along with the blooming deciduous plants that we had showed before previously. So this is illustrating some of the changes that we made at the corner. We have benches for seating all along this plaza entry to the top of the stairs at the intersection of 122nd and 85th. We've made changes in the planting here. We've incorporated these small stature evergreens in this location, as well as some at this entry too. We've maintained that deciduous canopy going down the stairs, which we think is a really nice element and wayfinding landscape as you come in off of this intersection and down the stairs. Creates a nice landscape overhead. But we've pulled these paper bark maples out to this corner to give a little bit more identity to that residential entry as well, and more interest in the landscape, so that the stair plaza landscape is a bit unique to the residential landscape that wraps and goes down 122nd. Next. And we've updated this graphic to give you an idea of those evergreens that we've added into the space, along with more foliage color, a bit more red. We're being very careful with the use of color in the planting. There's a lot of brick at the ground floor of the buildings. So a comment was made about wanting more red, but we're really trying to stick to a tone that will play nicely with that red as opposed to being kind of a clash in color. So we've got some darker foliage plants that we are using, as well as blooming materials in here. And again, these are photos of the evergreen trees that we're proposing. Again, they're very narrow, smaller stature, but we believe to be really appropriate for an urban environment. And we've got more variety, again, in this landscape as well. These are the more red-leafed, low shrubs that we've proposed. We've still got the roses as before, but we've incorporated some more perennial color and a little more pizzazz into the landscape. Okay, at this level, the comments really had to do, again, with tree selection. These previously were amelanchier trees, and the amelanchier trees are great multi-stem trees. They come as single-stem trees. They're on recommended street tree lists. They're beautiful trees. Nonetheless, you know, we wanted to really respond to that comment and take it to heart and think a bit more carefully about the choices made for these planting areas. So we have made a change in this tree type. We're now proposing a styrax tree, which is a deciduous tree. It's a garden kind of scale tree, but they've got beautiful little white blooms that hang down off the leaves. So from a pedestrian standpoint, it's a really nice tree to have in a retail space like this. It'll give a lot of interest in the spring when it's in full bloom. Next. And again, here's a photo of the styrax in bloom. We've also incorporated more color into this landscape as well, with variegated foliage, more evergreens, more color and pop in the form of perennials that will span more of the seasons, some hanging, trailing plant materials for edges of planters where appropriate, and then we have the evergreen vines that were mentioned before that are going to climb up from that lower garden space. And then really the last comment had to do with the use of vine maples. There was a kind of a strong desire to not use vine maples. We still think they're a beautiful tree and appropriate for a planting like this, but we really did take that into consideration, and we're proposing a Japanese maple for this location. They too will take this planting condition. They'll take the shade that will occur at the base down here in the space, but they'll also take the sun that they're going to encounter as they grow up and out of this space. Small leaf texture makes them a really nice lacy candidate for a planting like this as well. And this is a shade, more of a Pacific Northwest shade garden, so they're an appropriate tree for that, that placement. And then here as well, we've added some more variety in the landscape. Again, this environment is a bit unique to the project. It is shady. It will get filtered light, so we are somewhat limited in the plant materials we can use in here that will really thrive, but we've done our best to really get in, incorporated some really nice textures and colors that will complement each other and provide really great interest throughout the season. We've got Lenten Rose, which will bloom in the wintertime when nothing else is really blooming. We have the ferns, which are really kind of the workhorses of the landscape. They're the year-round evergreens. And then as spring comes on, you'll get these hostas and the brunera and the liriope starting to bloom and bring on another layer of color. Excuse me. And then, thank you. And then there was a comment made about cherry trees in this turnaround, in this parking lot, I should say, this auto court. We've actually had really great luck with cherries in overlid landscapes. There was concern about their ability to thrive with drainage conditions, and that is true, that on grade, cherries can really have a tough time with all the rain that we get. However, we did, again, we wanted to take that under consideration, so we've made a change here as well, and we're proposing a redbud if we, as a substitute for those cherries. The redbuds will bloom in the spring. They'll have a really nice fall color to them as well, but the bloom is really spectacular, and the branching structure is nice, too. It's a good stature tree for this environment, so we've made that change.
And can you remind me how deep the planting soil is at that location?
It's going to be at least a minimum of 36 inches. Yeah. And we're going to achieve that by planter depth and then berming and dropping planters and the like, yeah. So this is the red bud. And then we had the ginkgos previously surrounding that auto court, which we're still proposing. And then, again, we've worked in more plant materials to get a little bit more variety and color. We've got some red-leafed barberry happening, spreading yew, that really nice dark evergreen background. And then, again, the roses and perennials to really bring on the spring and the summer.
Question. So the auto, are you removing the cherry, or are you going to have the cherry and the redbud?
We're removing the cherry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We wanted to include this photo. This was what we had been proposing. And this is the new tree that we're proposing in its place. So they're very similar, but all right. Any questions about that portion?
The sweet gum trees along 85th and I guess along
122nd.
They get to be pretty big.
They'll get tall. They will get tall over time. Those trees will get to about 40 feet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Do we know on the main promenade as you head down with the deciduous trees, do we assume, or does that get seasonal lighting when it's bare branches with?
Yeah, so the intent is that those trees would get seasonal lighting. And we've picked trees that have a branching structure that'll be really nice with twinkle lights in them.
Similar at the auto court with the anything that gets...
Yeah, we're proposing electrical receptacles to be placed so that seasonal lighting can be placed in those locations.
Yep. I assumed it, but...
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. Absolutely.
And then, only question, I'm not sure if we had a view exactly showing it, but looking down those stairs on the southeast corner, what's the canopy height? Will that, I know it's wide enough, but will people be able to see down, or is the canopy low enough that as the stairs, you know, and each tier steps down, is that kind of blocking views down into the, kind of, to the public and retail areas?
The canopy, so the trees will branch probably 7 to 8 feet high. And then the tree canopy, as a tree grows, will get up to about 25, 30 feet tall. Okay. So, and they're not huge trees. The robinias are not, they're not like a red maple, which is going to fill that whole space.
Yeah.
They're a smaller stature tree. So we think they're kind of a nice balance between providing some canopy and providing views down into that space, because we don't want to block that entire way.
Sweet gum, right? The tallest trees?
The street trees that are on 122nd and 85th, the sweet gum are there, and then on 120th there are the maple trees. Those are the tallest, yeah. And those will be planted between curb and sidewalk in most cases.
So I know you haven't gone through your deliberations yet, but I wanted to make it clear. If you think that the revisions we've made today in the architecture and the landscape is suitable to meet the comments that you had at the last meeting, It is our goal to try to wrap up the design and get design approval as much as possible we can today. Again, that's premature because you haven't gone through your deliberations, but knowing going into that, if at all possible, we'd love to get final approval and design. Of course, that's subject to the final SEPA and traffic, but so far we don't anticipate any issues in that process.
All right, well, any other questions before we dive into deliberations? All right, Tim, let's start with you. You have any thoughts? I wasn't at the last meeting, so I've been kind of reviewing it from afar, just people's comments and listening, but what was the general feeling of the group, I suppose, in the last meeting?
I'm generally very, very pleased with the changes that have been made. I was probably the loudest on the 85th Street facade, and
I thought I was.
Between the two of Dave and I like what I'm seeing. I'm pleased to hear that the applicant thinks that the project is better. That was one of my first questions to them. Did we force you to do something that you still didn't want to do? And I think it's a little bit better in that respect. Certainly the materials and everything else, as we see on 85th, on the residential portions, are much more conventional. It's not the you know, glistening metal with the standing seam look. So, but I do like what I'm seeing there, and I think putting balconies that wrap around the corners, even though it's noisy, even though it's 85th, it is pretty gangbuster views from when you get up higher. There's probably going to be nothing built between here and the lake that will, you know, get in the way of the views there. So I think that's a good move. I certainly like if the allowed height goes up to the maximum, to take advantage of that, get some higher interior spaces for some of those areas, and then that lets the parapets drop down, especially on that north side. And you're right, I agree, we never see a building in elevation. It's just a fiction. You would never see that, but certainly from walking anywhere, you'll look up and see the differences with those little slight variations in the the cornice heights. So I like that. The only thing I'm not thrilled with, and I kind of alluded to it with one of my questions earlier about that, the overhang on 85th on the it seems just a little blocky to me, and it also, I didn't understand, or I don't understand, why perhaps the overhang doesn't sort of follow the notches of the building. The page 6 has it pretty clearly, or 5, or any of those. You know, it kind of gets a Manx cat cut-off tail sort of look on the south side of the blue section there, the blue areas. You know, when the building notches back, could the overhang sort of also notch back or be extended out on the east and the west ends of it to reflect that notch in the building? And then maybe if there's a way, just my initial look at it, it seemed kind of a heavy cap rather than a kind of a nice floating, and maybe it's just the dimension, the vertical dimension of that, that piece. That's mm-hmm. that was kind of my one initial kind of like, can I get it a little bit more?
I think it would be easy to do that. Yeah, and I see what you're saying. Is just go ahead and make the cantilever a little more on the blue 85th facade, and then notch it back and keep that consistent dimension as it goes around
To the extent that the overhang there on 85th is both sun and a little bit of weather protection for the uppermost floor, extending that overhang out to the, because we're nowhere close to a setback, as I understand it there.
No, that's fine, right.
That was literally my only thing. I really appreciate the steps taken on that loading ramp access there on 120th. Again, I was probably the loudest, you know, let's not look at the underside of that. And getting a solid door and pushing it back to the east.
You were the loudest on the
I was the loudest on that thing. And it doesn't look as steep, which is really nice, because there was going to have to be a guardrail to keep you from falling off of that ramp down to the residential entry right there. And I think we may avoid that now because it's a much more gradual ramping, and the ramping happens when you get more inside. It's a pretty steep little...
Exactly, right, right. Staying as low as possible near the street, right.
So, and the extra, that sixth floor there with the amenity space and the... two units up above the U-Haul, I think, is a great move because it just helps out that look right there, definitely. So that's it for me. Just that one little piece on the 85th overhangs is all I saw. It had me wondering.
So I agree with everything Tim said, except one thing I'll come back to. Basically, I think all of these changes were improvements. I hadn't thought about the roof line on the south face, and I don't find any particular trouble with this as is. It's a little hard for me to see what Tim is proposing why it might look better. But either way, I'm pleased with where we are.
To me, I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think it might be that they appear to be the exact same color, material, and specifically thickness. Like, to me, I want the lower, gray canopy at the grocery and also at the coffee, lower to the right. Those can be similar. They're both kind of interacting more at the sidewalk, street, pedestrian level. But higher up, I feel like they want to be different. They can maybe be lighter or thinner or protrude out or less than the canopies that are at the lower level, I just feel like they should be differentiated somehow. I'm not sure how yet, but I don't know. I think there's just an opportunity to play with it a little
right,
bit.
Right, right, right.
See what you can do.
Maybe a combination of what both of you are saying on this is that the upper one really could be a little bit thinner in that it may look a little heavy due to the nature of the materials underneath that it's going to,
It works
because it's a lightweight material. Where here, this seems to make a little bit more sense because it's brick. It can visually carry that weight. The view following this didn't have an updated of this notch underneath. It tends to make this float a little bit more too, and I think that's a more handsome detail than what we had on the other view. I guess in yeah, and as a goal to modulate this roof form a little bit more, I can go along with Tim, and what he's recommending is we just push this back and bring this out so that you see more of a roof modulation just because of the in and out of the overhang.
You see on a lot of canopies, there's like a different soffit material or color. Maybe just that gives it a bit of visual lightness to it. Like I said, it's just an opportunity to, play with it and see what you can design.
It looked like from the aerial or the big overhead view that that's not really the roof edge. It's kind of a real thick parapet wall cap that is totally built up. I mean, it's added to the structure. It's not the structure itself, I guess. I just think if it's a little thinner. I don't know. Is it similar to what we have on the back of Building A? My recollection is back of Building A was...
Typically it is because as we get up to that height, we're above the height maximum. So if we're going to occupy that space behind, we need to go back down to the roof level or versus creating a large cavity there. And of course, when it's an overhang like that, it's not very suitable for increasing the ceiling height because you can't raise the windows when you're under an overhang. So so yes, the answer to you, that is similar to the detail on the north face of Building A.
Yeah. But otherwise, I really appreciated especially the changes to that southwest corner along 120th. I think you said, adding in those units, reducing that concrete, I think was needed and appreciated. Now, seeing what they've come up with, it's a lot better.
Stepping the the little courtyard there as you come down that long stair.
Yeah, and moving the entry back and all that. Yeah, all of that has been refined really nicely. Mm-hmm. I want to say that I think this is one of the nicest site planning projects that I've seen in a long time that really capitalizes on all the public amenities, public spaces, and the landscape is really nicely integrated into the whole site. I'm impressed with that.
Well, thank you.
You did a great job with that. I agree with what everyone said almost. I was a dissenter on the 85th Street elevation, and while I think this is okay and it's fine, I like especially the higher glazing, the storefronts, I think is really successful. But I also feel like there's very little now to distinguish it from any other multi-use project in Kirkland. And before, it was a little rough. It was a little bit, I won't say edgy, but toward that, and it's lost that uniqueness. Having said that, you know, I'm it's a fine design, but the contrast there to me, it may not be as smooth, and I don't think it's the first one's as well integrated. The second one does a better job of that, but it's not going to stand out. It's not going to say something different.
Are you saying there's a third option we
haven't
seen yet?
I'm saying there could be.
Okay.
I mean, I would approve this. I'm not going to say no, but just put it out there for discussion.
Well, I wonder within the overall outline of this facade, which I think is reminiscent of the steel channels and everything else. I mean, it's going to look pretty edgy because of the common detailing to the commercial frontages in the plaza area. It's a little bigger, which I think is more appropriate to the auto scale along 85th. Uh-huh. There might be some opportunity. There's a great deal of area here where we can have some fun with maybe the depths of some of those mullions and create almost a fin-like quality to some of these verticals that might give it a little more distinction at the pedestrian and auto level. It's hard to see in this elevation.
Well, possibly, and I guess the significant use of all the, cement panels on the 85th, I just like the other finish better.
So those blue bookends of that, that's not fiber paneling, is it?
No, that's corrugated metal. And
it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. A fairly large profile. Right. So
I'm sorry, I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
No, I'm so, yeah. I think because we've added in some verticals to panelize the horizontal, but what shouldn't be showing is some of these floor lines. So they're not big squares. It is really a dominant horizontal shadow line going through there.
But there are the verticals, though.
Otherwise,
you get too long a piece.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah, you can tell a little bit better from
anyway,
elevations,
right,
but the effect. And I noticed you had oriented it to be kind of the corrugation to be horizontal. Was that thought out? Had you looked at the vertical orientation of that? I'm just curious how it looks.
Well, this is typical in several different locations, not just the color, but that box rib pattern and horizontal. We also have it on 120th for the kind of the clay colored here. So on this facade around the corner there, we have that same detailing. Here we have the same detailing as well. There we have the same detailing. So we've just stayed consistent to the vertical expression of that material in various colors. We've got so many different facade treatments going on that we're trying to find some commonality for both economy, but detailing and so forth. And they're typically placed in locations where you don't see that repetition.
I think that's the metal.
Oh, that's the metal.
On building
inner units on the south face on 85th. They're not metal.
Yeah, that's it.
No, that's the cement board in here. And those are much smaller areas because we've got typically the bays that are in contrasting color inside that area. You can see those bays in here. We don't have a whole lot of wall area to create that consistent pattern to make it read right. If you take a box rib like that and you make it in really small areas, it looks awkward, I think.
And you're always limited by that 4-foot dimension on, as I understand, just the panel size is 4-foot max on one of the, is that right? Or can you get bigger stuff?
Well, you don't see the pattern when you stack this up. It lays over the top of itself, so you don't see it in that direction. But
I'm talking about the panel.
So oh, the cement board.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's 4 or 5 feet max. Okay. Right.
I know it's just a rendering issue. It looks like when it wraps the corner, there's some.
Oh, there's some big areas.
Those
we haven't broken that up enough yet. Yeah. Okay. We didn't translate the lines around the corner, but typically you'll break those up and more than you have to.
Right.
Just because it's a nice detail to, and it locks in the window patterns as well.
Other thoughts, comments? And then we can start all over when SEPA comes back and makes tons of changes to the site. No, I don't think that there's anything unique at the site, is there, that we'd anticipate changes to the project, is there? Is there some sort of creek or underground, you know, waterbed or something that would totally throw off the SEPA review?
Not of any consequence.
No.
There's always underground.
There's a culvert water under there.
But,
yeah, it's really just traffic review.
Oh, okay.
At this point. And so that's kind of time-consuming, with the back and forth on that.
And traffic review is going to result in more or less garage, which really is not evident in the exterior design. And we've really gone through the weeds with Nguyen over in detail about all the circulation for trucks and cars, and I think we've got a pretty good handle on it. We're getting very good feedback from him at this point, especially now that we made that change on along 122nd to the truck loading area.
With that in mind, what sort of added lanes or C curbs, and I mean, what do we, right now 120th is basically a center turn lane and, you know, two traffic lanes going each direction, and that's it. And I can just imagine the ball up of people that have turned left off of 85th to head to Costco or to head to the commercial building back there in the left turn lane, and there's people coming out of this, you know, out of the between D and A to want to turn left to get up to 85th. It just seems like we're going to have to be adding some lanes or doing something somewhere, because there's no way that these, you know, the amount of traffic on both of 122nd and 120th can exist without, just the Costco traffic alone.
And there's no consideration in the department to do anything about that. I mean, there was some discussion about possibly adding some additional lane along 122nd. Maybe they're thinking that a great deal of that is going to translate to 122nd, maybe a free right turn here. We do have a right turn there. Is that in the plans or is that installed now? Do you know?
The turn lane there? It's in.
It's in there now. Okay.
It's there. But so let's say that somebody comes out of the slot between A and D and says, I'm going to go get on the freeway. They're trying to get into the turn lane, cross the through lane, get into the right turn lane. I mean, it's going to be a zoo.
Exactly what Tang is looking at.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's looking at this location, too. I mean, at worst case, heaven forbid, we end up with right in, right out. But we're really hoping against that. So.
What solutions are in the offing?
I think it's turn restrictions. It's I think we've shifted, you guys have shifted the curb cuts around a little bit to accommodate some direction from traffic.
Right.
A lot of study of the pedestrian crossing to Costco with the loss of the parking lot. So it's just, you know, digging into the details at this point and looking at the traffic report and where the trips are projected to go and come from.
I mean, considering that this is truck loading and that we've pulled that entrance doors back as far as we have, Tran is he's feeling comfortable with this distance because it does meet the minimums. This cross over here, it's a matter of where does that get located in relative to this location here. And then there's some talk about possibly moving this over, but I mean, that's all kind of in flux. It doesn't appear like any of these discussions and changes to traffic flow are affecting the architecture, and that's, we're trying to head that off. I mean, as Jeremy said, we've made variations on we've pulled this entrance back into the parking garage further back to make sure that that wasn't an issue in conflict with 120th. And of course, we don't have that issue here, and we eliminated that exit through here in the same way to avoid that issue. So we don't anticipate anything coming out of the SEPA in traffic that's going to upset the design.
I do have a suggestion, given the time lag that's going to happen between what you see tonight and when we come back with SEPA. And there may be some project changes, and it sounds like you'll have some direction on the change to the roof on Building D to incorporate by motion. But I think your motion should include whatever changes you'd like to see relative to that, a continuance to the May 6th meeting. You can't, I know the applicant would love it if you could approve the project tonight, which you really can't because SEPA's not done. But I think what you could do is include in your motion that if you have found the project to be consistent with the design guidelines and the guidance on master plans, you could include that in your motion, and that's kind of telling the applicant that in general everything they showed you so far is compliant and there's not going to be any big shifts when it comes back in May.
Ready for a motion?
Yes.
I move that we find this project consistent with the design guidelines and the conceptual master plan. And schedule a hearing
continuance.
On May 6th. Continue it to May 6th.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries.
Can I get a clarification? Does that mean that any modification we make that we've discussed along 85th for just those roof overhangs, that can be done administratively?
It'll be back. When you come back, we can show it to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with what they're going to come up
with. If you weren't seeing it again, I would say we would handle it administratively.
Right.
Yeah, it'd have to be something really wild, you know.
The other thing I would like to do, too, is just kind of consolidate everything into one grand package so we can basically have a plan set that you guys can look at and make sure everything's consistent and
approval. It's also good for approval, yeah. The final that we're approving.
It helps my job when the building permit comes in. I have one package to look at.
Okay, so we'll sift through all the drawings and make those changes, and then it'll be one package.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then...
Your concerns about... Well, I was concerned about the face, south face behind.
And before we can adjourn, we have election of officers for 2019. So...
Oh, yeah, at this point in the rules of procedure, generally the vice chair becomes chair and the board elects a new vice chair who would in theory take over with the next year's election of officers. Carolyn's term is, she's term limited, so her term will be up in March, so that normal progression of vice chair to chair won't work well this year. So I think you'll need to elect a new chair and a new vice chair, and you can't re-elect Brad if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Are we going to have another another meeting soon? I was going to say, I'd be curious to get Shoshana and Carlos's opinions on if they're interested in, you know, picking up one of either chair or vice.
Don't know, and I don't believe we have anything on the docket right now.
Calendar shows nothing, but that doesn't mean...
Yes, it doesn't come up, yeah.
So it could be a while before something, before we're back.
So Brad, you're re-upping though, right? Are you?
I think so. Except I've been putting in a ton more hours with my new gig, and so I'm not sure if I should rerun for Prez. Yeah, I've got, this is my fourth, so I've got another term that I can do.
Right.
You could defer. I think you'll need to elect a chair at least for the interim. But if you want to defer until we have Soshi and Carlos back in town, that's
Can
option.
We table it till next?
Yeah, I think you
something as simple as tabling.
I think you would just go ahead and elect a pro tem chair at least so that continuity is there for the next meeting. And if you'd be willing to do that, Brad.
Yeah.
Or Naveena's not making eye contact.
No. I just not at the moment.
All right, so we'll take a motion for interim chair. Well, all right. Actually, I'll take a motion to table the election of officers for 2019.
I move that we table the selection of officers for 2019 until our next meeting. Hopefully it will be before May.
Whenever it is.
I second it.
Right. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. And then if we're tabling, then...
I'll move for adjournment.
Do we have to elect an interim chair?
Yeah, we need an interim chair.
I move that Brad be our interim chair until we have the election.
Second.
Second. Third.
All right, those in favor?
Aye.
All right, so I'll stay chair until we get Carlos and Shoshana back, and then we can have a full election of officers for 2019.
Great.
Excellent. Okay.
Now.
I can move for adjournment.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Meeting's adjourned.